Did you know buying, selling, fixing houses, and investing in real estate is easier than you think? All you need is help from a couple of experts who flipped hundreds of houses, seen most situations, and are here to share their knowledge with you. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundup Radio Show with Andrew Jobe and J.R. Reed from selltojr.com.
Hello, Rounders. Welcome to the Real Estate Roundup Radio Show. So glad to have you guys here with us. I am Andrew Jobe, one of your hosts, joined by Mr. Reed. J.R. Reed, how are you doing today?
Doing good, man. Super excited about this show.
Yeah, we've got exciting guests here today.
Absolutely. We have none other than Logan Fulmer from the San Antonio area, representing Distress Property Acquisitions. What's up, Logan?
Hey.
How's it going, man?
It's good.
You brought along the posse and brought Lucian Galloway with you.
Lucian's here. My wife is downstairs down the way at the mall.
Oh, that's a dangerous place to leave her.
Yeah,
that is dangerous.
Thought about that.
She likes it there.
Awesome, man. Well, we're super excited to have you on the show. Logan has an interesting business niche within the real estate investing world, and I cannot wait to get into what that niche is. And so, Logan, if you don't mind, why don't you start us off by just telling us a little bit about who you are and what you do currently now?
My name is Logan Fulmer. I'm out of San Antonio, Texas. I've got an office of 20 folks, an attorney, private investigator, genealogist, and we do distressed property. It comes in a lot of different forms, but in summary, it's property that can't sell through a traditional title insurance company. We've got to buy it without title, fix all these problems, and then we get to go sell it and make a little money. And over those 10 years, it's developed into something really interesting, but the heart of our business that's been the most consistent thing over the last 10 years is buying property that other people typically can't buy. And the reason we want to do that is because there's no competition and it allows us to almost set our price. And I know that sounds crazy in a time like this when it's been a very competitive market. We've just seen the top of a market kind of break over a little bit, so everyone knows what's happening. But when you buy property that has title problems, that's the stuff that most investors stay away from. They shy from it. And if you're the only idiot that's willing to try to buy that stuff, you're not in that situation where you're the ninth person that's called them about their foreclosure or whatever it is they're selling. You're the only dude, or they've been in situations in the past, but other people back away or can't close.
For sure.
And it presents a very interesting opportunity for a pitch that's unique. You know, my pitch is, you know, I hate to say it, but your property is not worth anything. It's really worth what it's worth what someone will pay. And if no one will pay you any money for this, it sounds strange, but your property might be worth nothing. Now that we've established that, and we need a little conversation to establish that. Once we establish that, I'm willing to give you $10,000, $5,000, whatever it is. I'll send a lawyer over with a deed and a notary tomorrow and cash or a cashier's check, and I'll become the owner, subject to all the debt, without title insurance, subject to all the title problems. I'm going to take on this problem.
For sure. That conversation is an interesting conversation because I've had that conversation numerous times.
Yeah.
And it can take a while for that to set in with people.
But the neat thing is when you're calling a property that other people are on and it's a very transactable property, you got to hurry up and get them signed. You're adding urgency and all these tactics. In this case, hey, I'll cut a deal with you. If you're not ready, let me tell you what this is going to look like and I'll circle back later. And there's zero urgency for me because there is going to be another person we're going to call today that we had the same conversation with 6 months ago and they are now ready. And I know they're going to work with me because nobody else is really doing it. So you're dealing with me or nobody or the tax man. He's going to foreclose.
For sure.
So in these scenarios, I mean, there's a lot of risk involved in this.
That's what a lot of people think. But as me and the other guys in our office worked into this model early on, we would look at how to manage our risk down. So because you can't get title insurance, it's a less liquid asset. However, if let's just say a property's worth $200,000 and there are two owners, 50-50, one owner has $100,000 in equity. And if I'm going to buy that equity for $5,000 or $10,000, I have $90,000, $80,000 or so worth of equity for my small spend. So first thing is the small spend, $5,000 or $10,000. Most of us, if we're in business to have a couple bucks in the bank, we can live without that $10,000 for a long time.
For sure.
So that's the first hurdle that a lot of folks say the deal's got to work or be clean or be fast because I'm spending hundreds of thousands. $10,000. I'll take it on my stock account and deliver it here in this deal.
Yeah.
The other thing is the worst case scenario, if it's got all these issues and owners can't get together, you can file a partition lawsuit and for $10,000 or $20,000, the judge will force it to be sold. And you'll be able to access your $100,000 of equity for the 10 you bought it for, another 10 and 20 in legal fees. You're still gonna make $50,000.
Yeah.
Great return on your spend, very efficient use of capital, and lots of equity. So when I look at it that way, I say, gosh, I don't feel like it's risky. It might take a while, but in my mind, my equity is secured and my investment is very well covered.
For sure.
So that can that you can use that same concept to approach a lot of different deals. 50 owners, millions of dollars, same approach can happen.
For sure. Well, I want to back up for a second because we'll get into the nitty-gritty of how you do these deals here in a little bit. But how did you find yourself? Because I know you didn't just wake up one day and you're like, I'm going to go deal with super distressed title and this is going to be my little niche within the real estate investing market. How did you like stumble upon this?
So I went through this era in my life where I was still working in the oil field and I was buying land downtown. That's what I thought my next move was. And back, you know, 10 years ago, you could buy an infill lot in San Antonio for $5,000 or $10,000. So I was buying those. One of them I bought without title insurance, kind of a flub, little mistake. Guy told me, I'm not going through title, just buy it now. I did it. And when I went to go sell it a year later, I realized I'd bought 1/9, not 100%. I realized I was one of 9 owners. So I had to go through this process of finding the other owners, buying them, dealing with judgments and liens of theirs, several other title issues. And I knew that I had to get it fixed. So after that summer, I realized, whoa, there's huge margin in this. And I also went back to the east side to buy more land, but the values had gone up. So those $5,000 and $10,000 lots were now $50,000 to $100,000 lots. And no one would sell me for $5,000 or $10,000 anymore. And it occurred to me, there are lots of properties that I haven't transacted and they have fairly high tax balances still. Why haven't those sold? Are they like that one that I did? And the next year, I actively decided to seek out a couple of those and try to work them out. And it worked. So then the second year, I said, maybe I should just do this. That's how kind of ease into it.
For sure. You find something that works. That's how business works.
Right.
In general. Like you start off in business one way and you think, hey, I'm going to go make $1,000,000 doing this. And before you know it, you find some little
variation.
You're
doing something else.
Yeah. It's a variation of it. And you're like, wait, this is way more profitable, way easier.
Right.
Yeah.
So over the 10 years, me and my other partners and employees in our office have figured out what the biggest problems are that cause properties to not be transactable but are easy for us to solve. So there's enough problems for us to get a fair deal and negotiate a low purchase, but the problems aren't so big it'll take us 10 years to solve.
Okay.
You know, every title problem you can solve, but the question is the juice worth the squeeze? And can we turn that inventory and that capital quick enough? So today we actually have a business doing it. It's not just one dude trying to fix deal by deals or deal by deal. We've got 20 people in our office. We got a 5,000 square foot suite there in my building. Our current inventory right now, we're somewhere between 100 and 110 properties that is work in process. We own 1% or 100%. And we're in the process of curing defects, getting them to market. That block of inventory is worth about $15 million, and our total basis right now is about $4 million. Okay. So we're at about 30 cents on the dollar. Once you start to add in overhead expense, commissions, and some salaries and things like that, we're usually about 45 to 50% of fair market value is our total cost.
Okay.
And then we just go straight to MLS.
And so you... When you say fair market value, like whatever it's worth that day on the market, not like ARV where I'm going to go fix it up and do all
every time says ARV in my office, I'm like, huh? And I'm trying to train people to stop using that word because to me, that word doesn't matter. Fair market value mean what's it worth today? And I don't care if you can just fix the roof and get this much or do this and get that much. What I want to know is what is it worth right now? Because we're just going to put it on the market and sell it. I'm not going to do any work to it.
Okay.
That's it. So whatever's worth today. And surprisingly, a lot of folks don't think you can sell crummy looking properties on MLS because they're less common. But you would be surprised. Investors sure. shop there too.
Yeah.
100%. Where do you think the investors who don't know how to buy off market go?
From us on MLS.
Literally.
You're right. Yeah.
The best buyers are on the MLS.
You know, so that's another good point. Why we like to get to that market is you're not under this wholesale situation where you have a finite timeline and a finicky seller and all these rules and you have to be careful how you market. We've paid for it. We don't have any debt on it. That's another caveat. You can't use debt on these deals because you can't get title insurance. So it calls you to retain earnings more, figure out how to manage your capital, but it's on the market. And we just tell people, give us your best offer. And there's no funny business, and we close when we want. So it's a much different type of transaction.
So if I'm hearing you right, you basically skirt the whole, all the wholesalers that are out there gunning for this distressed property that's mm-hmm. on the, you know, the tax delinquent list, that's beat up in the neighborhood. Maybe it's been vacant for a long time.
Yeah.
You don't have to compete with those guys because most of those properties, if we really get down to it, have really messy titles. And if it's messy enough for a wholesaler not to be able to deal with, those are the ones that you want.
Right. We have times where there are folks that will, sellers that will tell us, well, so-and-so is going to give me this much. And over time, we've developed, you know, canned responses for that. Just like a salesperson would overcoming certain objectives or objections. Our response is, this is easy. We've run your title report already in our office. We've examined it. We've abstracted it. We've examined it and we've underwritten it. I'm willing to give you $10,000. And we know that you can't sell this wholesaler because you tried to sell last year and it didn't work either. It won't work again. I'm not going to make any promises. I don't even want you to sign a contract with me. I'm going to send my attorney over tomorrow afternoon with cash, a deed, a contract, and a notary. And if you want to sell it for that price, I'll pay you tomorrow. But if you want to try this wholesaler again, I'll be here next month when it doesn't work.
Or next year when you're ready to come back.
Or whenever it is. So our pitch is very unique.
That's kind of cool. I like that, actually.
Wholesalers hate it because I hear all the time, oh, I was working on that deal and y'all got it. I'm like, you weren't working on this deal, dude.
You were working on the seller, but you weren't working on the deal.
That's right.
Yeah, I love that. You take the whole competition part out. I mean, here in Houston, I've been told by Steve Trang, who hosts a big podcast, that
yeah.
he has more, because his whole audience is wholesalers, he has more listeners in Houston than in any other market.
Wow. Really?
Yeah, so there's more single operators here in Houston than there are supposedly in every other market. So we have a lot of, you know, one-man bands here, which is cool. But we run into all the time people trying to do anything they can to get a deal. And so now you're talking about you don't even have to worry about those people because you're not trying to get every deal. You're just trying to get the super right. messy stuff where the seller is like, I just need out.
That's it.
I just need out.
It's like the pawn shop of real estate.
It's a pawn shop of real estate. Logan Fulmer is the Pawn Stars guy.
Pawn King of San Antonio. Yeah.
You know, when you start that part of the discussion, it got me thinking about something that a lot of folks don't realize. Folks tell me, I hear you talking about commercial real estate. I want some of that. I hear you talking about ranches. I want some of that. Or I like to make rent houses. I want some of that. And the top of the funnel for this is distress. It's not by asset class. So when folks say, how do you get this? How do you get that? We start with a delinquent tax list. We're looking for folks that are on their last level of effort to maintain this thing. And once they start to get a few years behind, we'll now take a look at it and be interested. But it could be a warehouse, could be an apartment complex, could be a ranchette, could be 6 acres with a crummy house, could be a mobile home, could be an infill lot. We're not discriminatory at all. We have found that there's no bad product, only bad pricing.
Yeah.
I'll literally buy anything if the price is right and there's some demand in the area.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. So now that we have a base understanding of how you operate, how you make money, here's my question that's just burning in the back of my head. How do you continue to have continuous revenue, like on a monthly basis or quarterly basis, to be able to keep the operation running when a lot of these deals can take anywhere from, you know, 6 months to 2 years to get it all done?
In the early days, it took 12 to 18 months was our typical cash conversion cycle. That's long. Now, each deal back then even would make 50, 100, 200 grand in net off of a small spend, 50 grand. So they were great investments. The problem is you have to start loading that pipeline now while you're making money some way. And in about 6 months, it'll slowly start paying out. And the problem with that is if you start to have problems with your markets or your financing or your operations in your business with such a long cycle, you might be in for a big surprise in 9 months and you don't know it because problems are happening now, but you can't see them. We didn't like that. Also, we valued the velocity of our capital. So as we started to get some experience and get better at this, we realized we want the problems to be just bad enough for us to get a good trade down on the price, but not so bad that it takes us 10 years to fix. 10 years to fix. So as we improved our skills, we got better at fixing problems, and we also got better at vetting and saying, don't want that one, don't want that one, want this one. So today, the typical avatar of a deal in our office sells for $200,000 or so. We've spent between $50,000 and $70,000 to acquire it, and our typical cash conversion cycle is about 120 to 140 days.
Okay, that's quick.
That is. But there are deals we choose to not take because it could take years or the margin isn't big enough.
Yeah.
Now, there are some that take years and we still choose to do them, and they're outliers. But we have three or four deals that are worth between $1 and $4 million. Our entry point was literally $10,000 to $30,000 on them. They'll take years, but I only got 10 grand in one. We bought a community property interest from a fighting couple. The complete community estates were $7 million. We bought a $3.5 million interest from a spiteful wife for $10,000. Now, it's going to take 2 years worth of litigation and $150,000 to $200,000 in legal fees to cure these defects by fighting with the co-owner husband. But at that point, I mean, we'll make $2, $3 million on the deal and might spend $300,000. It's worth having that fight.
Talk about it.
Yeah,
husband.
I was going to say the wife, yeah. Man, she actually probably feels like she got a great deal on that because she gets to watch this from the sidelines now.
That was a big thing for her. She didn't care about money. She had to leave. And according to her, she had to leave the relationship because it was abusive. He was a monster. And he wouldn't divorce her. She wanted to go marry a new man and get new health insurance, start a new life, all these things. He wouldn't divorce her. Oh, wow. So the kicker is she still owns half the community estate.
Oh, wow.
So we said, this is your coup de grace. This is your ability. You ain't getting anything from him anyway. You know that. She knew that. She said, I would love to hand him this ball of, you know, yarn to untangle this mess that you guys are about to fix. I'd love to hand that to him. If I can get 10 grand while I turn his life into a mess, I'll do it. And we didn't really love seeing it that way, but we're interested in curing the defects, making money.
Yeah.
So we'll fight her fight for her.
For sure.
For a couple $1 million.
You're going to make a couple mil off of it.
Yeah. But the moral of the story is you can do deals like that once you've figured this model out, have retained earnings, are good in the legal system, and can afford to carry that and have that fight while you're running business that pays you weekly.
For sure. That makes sense.
So you said your background was from the oil fields.
Do you
have a legal background? I mean, do you have...
No.
You just kind of... That first deal where you just kind of figured it out, that sounds like something that a lot of people would get involved in and then just be terrified of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was too.
Obviously, it was an aha moment to where you said there's legs to this. But what was it? What was the magic moment in that first deal to where all the pieces came together, you saw the light at the end of the tunnel, and you're like, hey, this is actually something.
The margin was still big. I really screwed up. And I spent a whole summer fixing it, and probably – I bet in that case I spent 10 grand in legal fees. When I say legal fees, I don't mean lawsuit. I mean, I went to a lawyer's office who the title company referred me to, and I had no clue what I was doing. And he was just kind of okay at it anyway. But I said, here's the problem. I own 1/9. He's like, well, you got to buy the other 8/9. So I'm like, how do I do that? And he said, find the people and give them money. And I'm like, oh, that's easy.
I could do that.
So I looked up those people and started making them offers. Most of them just sold to me simply. And my pitch was very natural. I screwed up. I thought I bought the whole property, and I didn't. It's a big mess anyway and has delinquent taxes and title problems still. Can I give you $500 for your share? The majority of the people just gave it to me like that.
Wow.
A couple of them held out at the end and said, no, it's worth more, yada, yada, yada. So I had to work through some stuff. But I would pay the lawyer to give me the guidance by the hour, craft the deeds. A couple of them had child support judgments and liens and things like that. So I had to go through and negotiate those with the creditors. But in the end, I still made like 80 grand on this deal. I'm all in it for 20, sold it for 100. I made 80 grand. And in that moment, I thought, I have a lot less capital than I have time. This is a very efficient use of capital, and it goes a long way. And I thought, gosh, here's a path to make a lot of dollars with my limited resources today. That was the aha moment of, let me go do this again.
Literally.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's wild.
And that was 8 years ago. So, you know, people were making $20,000, $15,000 on assignment fees. You go flip a whole house and might make 50.
Yeah, no.
I spent 20 to make 80 and thought, I don't have to go to law school or I don't have to go to med school. Like, I don't have to be a professional. I can just be this guy.
So it's almost like you were just figuring it out along the way, too.
So a big difference in where my mindset was in that moment and other people's is I was willing to spend money with the lawyer to get this guidance and go try it. And a lot of people are unwilling to spend legal money because they just feel like it's money down the drain.
It's a waste of money.
Yeah, but to me, I thought, this is an opportunity for a big upside. Maybe I can solve this. So I was willing to spend the money to try it.
Yeah.
I mean, today we spend $10,000, $15,000 on exploratory cases that we sometimes don't even complete or don't even do. But the upside's so huge. I give you an example. The way this kind of unravels, I told you about the big community estate we were dealing with. We came across a delinquent surface estate, and we don't do minerals currently, but we came across a surface estate, and as we're doing research, we found mineral deeds in there, realized a lot of the minerals had been stripped, but we found six or eight people that still had the minerals attached to the surface estate. We realized if we bought their surface estate and paid off the delinquent taxes, we would get six shares of 200 that would include minerals. So it was six of 200 is 3%. We get 3% of the mineral estate. Well, it's a 4,000-acre pool. This was a 50-acre deal. We get looking, figured all out. Long story short, we start paying a lawyer to help give us guidance. We realize those six two-hundredths had an impound balance with ExxonMobil of $400,000 sitting in the account. We didn't know that yet, but we knew it was big because our rough math. And we knew they weren't in pay status. We thought if we buy these, we might be able to make a demand for the pay stat or the impound balance and get in pay status going forward. So we did learn that there was about $10,000 monthly pay status and 400,000 arrears.
Holy cow.
So we spent
just sitting there.
Right. So in that case, the upside was so big, we thought we'll start spending money to test this. And we spent $10,000 in legal fees, $6,000 to buy the shares. When it was all done, we were in it for about $20,000 with some other fees. Made the demand to Exxon. We're negotiating right now, and we think they're going to put us in pay status.
Dang.
So for $20,000, we'll cash about a $400,000 upfront check, and then $10,000 a month. That pool has been paying for 80 years. So we suspect it'll continue to pay in the future.
Holy cow.
So
that's
where you can take these big retained earnings and say, I'm willing. You can go to Vegas and gamble $20,000 that weekend, or you can test this. I'd test this.
I would definitely test that.
Yeah.
That's a whole different world, too, getting into minerals and – I'm sure there's millions of dollars.
We don't know
around.
Anything about it, yeah. But we do know that you can hire a well-trained expert to connect the dots that we don't understand, and we'll do what we're good at, call people and cut deals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all you're doing at that point.
Right, so we start with low-cost properties, title defects, and as we start to expand and kind of elaborate on the model, there are new opportunities along the way.
For sure, absolutely.
And so that deal is still ongoing, but now it's cash flowing, so it's almost supporting itself.
Right. So now that we've cut that deal and we think we're going into pay status in the next 60 days with Exxon, we've found about 20 other people in that same pool in the same situation. And we have contracts with them now. We're just waiting to close until Exxon finally puts us in pay status. So we're not technically cash
there
flowing,
yet, but
we should within 2 months probably.
That's crazy. That's a wild scenario. Just from a surface estate that may or may not have mineral rights to it, and somehow y'all figure out there are, like, you know, six shares out of 200.
We're just running the title report and finding mineral deeds in the title thinking, oh. Then we put it into Google. One of the guys in the office put the address of the site into Google and saw these big old pump jacks and battery tanks on it, and we were like, holy crap, there's minerals.
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool. That's the fun part about doing this stuff is, like, putting all the pieces together and trying to, like, make this puzzle fit, and you're like, wait a second, there's some actual buried treasure here.
Right. You know, something that I like to explain to people early on is the moment you start making real money, don't go buy that big house, rent that expensive condo, or, you know, Lamborghini is $4,000 a month if you're going to make the payment with a down. $4,000 a month, a lot of people can get to that point where they do it. We chose to reinvest in lawyers, more people to help us, retained earnings so we have the capital to do this. And that's what allowed the business to grow as opposed to starting to rack up a bunch of overhead personal expenses.
Yeah.
Really gave us the capital.
Cool.
So that's something I try to explain to people. Pick something simple. Try to figure a couple of these out. Once you do it and get these outsized paydays, retain that money for the business. Don't go buy those new boots or the watch or the whatever. That concept is very elementary, but it takes a lot of discipline.
That's easier. That's a hard thing for a lot of people.
It is.
They're chasing the paycheck, and it's just, when's the next one? When's the next one? When's the next one?
that Instagram status is, that's a big deal to a lot of people.
You know, me and my wife were living in a little apartment till 2017. I mean, at that point, I had over $1 million in cash in the bank and a bunch of assets. And we're still living in our $1,100 a month apartment.
I think that's a lost art. You know, we talk about this all the time with our team. Like just because you're making a little bit of money doesn't mean you got to go spend it all.
I know.
It doesn't mean that. Well, hey, we're going to take a quick break. But on the backside of the show, I would love for you to be able to share with the listeners, you know, maybe some more about the avatar of what you look for and how you get your deals.
This will be the fun part because it's so much more simple than the complicated stuff I just told you. So get ready.
Awesome.
Welcome back, Rounders. Glad to have you guys still with us. Man, this has been a very insightful show. We've never really had this kind of talk on the show before about dirty title, broken title, how to investigate and really make deals out of what other people presume to be worthless.
Yeah, literally. It's fun to have. It's a new refreshing point of view in the real estate realm where, you know, we're so focused on in our business and a lot of other people that listen to the show are so focused on, you know, get the deal as fast as you can because that person's super motivated to sell. And this is like taking that and putting it on its head saying, hey, here is the issues you're going to run into. I'm happy to help you whenever you're ready for our help. But until then, good luck.
Yeah.
Just goes to show, too, there are so many strategies in real estate. And if you think you've got something down, just talk to somebody else. And they're probably doing something different and or better than how you're doing it today.
It's true. Okay. So on the first half of the show, we got into what your business is, how you make money, Logan. Mm-hmm. On the second half, we would love to jump into what does a deal look like? What do y'all look for? We got the tip of the iceberg when it came to the avatar, but what are you guys specifically looking for when you're evaluating a deal?
We're looking for enough problems to be able to negotiate a good purchase price, a very low one, but the problems aren't so huge that it takes forever, years and years and years to fix. And that kind of sounds very abstract to a person who maybe is running a wholesale business or doing nothing but flipping houses right now. But to say it in a different way, where it's easier to understand, I'll say it this way. We start with a delinquent tax list. Most properties that have title problems surface there. And if folks had the money or the wherewithal to solve the tax issue, they already would. So the fact that they're there is a lot of different indicators in one. It's a very low-cost lead source. It's a very simple data set to work with. And it's generally geographically categorized. So like, what is this? Harris County delinquent tax list. Take that for a couple $100, convert it into an Excel or CSV file, another $50 on Fiverr, and then filter it by area that you're familiar with or price point that you're familiar with, and you have a very high-quality lead set right there that 70-80% of them have title problems. The title problems might be as simple as just needing an affidavit of heirship, or they might be as complicated as, like you said, a deed was never transferred, and there are tons of judgments and liens on an apartment complex that's been known for almost a generation.
Yeah. Okay.
So being that you start with the tax list, I mean, looking at that, just assuming, correct me if I'm wrong, at some point there's too much taxes owed on a property that's not worth it for you.
Right. So we'll filter it a lot of times. We'll pick a geographic region. And a metric that we like to use is 2 years of delinquent taxes or greater. I'll give you an example. Back when I was in college, financial issues, not on top of my business, and I'd have to pay my credit card bill. And I don't have quite enough money, but I'm going to get it paid next month, and I'm lying to myself. And next month comes around, and I got to pay rent or credit card. Crud. I'm going to pay the rent because I got to have a place to live. Don't pay the credit card. Now I'm 2 months behind. By the time you're 3 or 4 months behind, I face the reality that I've overspent. I'm not going to be able to catch up with this. And that's life. And it's probably going to hurt my credit. Crud. Well, there's this process that you go through of like denial, acceptance, you know, just through these phases. When a person is delinquent on the same bill, but for their house, same thing happens. That bill, let's say the property tax bill is just 1 month delinquent. They're not facing it yet. I'm going to get it caught up, yada, yada, yada. 3 years later, ain't nobody kidding nobody. You ain't getting caught up. It's a lot of dollars. Yeah. We all know. And folks in that situation are much more realistic or accepting of the reality.
For sure.
So we like to do a little filter. In Texas, it's about 2.5 to 3% is the 2.8 is the most common tax rate.
For sure.
So if you'll multiply that by three, that's basically a little less than 1%. So if you have taxes that are owed that are about 1% of the total value of the property, you'll start to see they're at least behind 3 years. That can start to add, but we don't want them to be more than 30%, 20% of the value of the property in tax delinquency because your equity starts to go away. I want 50% equity, and I want to be able to give the sellers enough money where it's real dollars. If I'm giving them $400, they can take it or leave it. It doesn't change their life. But if I can get them $5,000, $10,000, that's real money.
Go start over, do something else, get on your feet.
Right. Yeah. So I would like that metric to kind of work. So I want to spend 30, 40% of the total value of the property in spend. And you got to have some equity. You got to have some taxes. So run a filter like that. Once you start to narrow that down, you start to shrink your list a bit.
For sure. It sounds like you've gone through the road of going down this path and, oh my God, I spent all this time, money, effort, and this was not very fruitful on this deal.
Right. Now, what I'm telling you is the most simple way, the delinquent tax list. Folks that are experienced and more advanced, I would tell them to look at the tax foreclosure list. Those are 21-day notice. The property's going to be sold in 21 days by the sheriff for delinquent taxes, and you got to jump on it. But you also have to solve those problems really quickly, pay the delinquent taxes off, and or file a restraining order against the county to prevent them from doing the sale while you fix the remaining problems. So I want you to be a little bit more experienced and sophisticated when you're working on the tax foreclosure list. But until you get there, take that tax delinquent list.
Interesting. Okay. So that tax foreclosure list, you're definitely a little more under the gun for timing.
Short fuse, man, 21 days.
Yeah. And those are some people that have been beat up too, because every wholesaler and their mom has called that person.
They were calling them when they were on the tax delinquent list. Today, they've matured to the tax foreclosure list.
That's true. So it's been years of getting calls.
Right.
Or texts or letters.
So
that's
actually a really good point. Think about who you're dealing with. Someone has been called for years by wholesalers, tried to sell, wouldn't quite agree, couldn't get it fixed. They literally have 21 days left to lose the property or deal with you. So you can be dealing with some fickle people sometimes.
Yeah, real fickle.
So how often, I'm fascinated by this, but I would presume that a lot of these properties end up on the tax delinquent list because nobody's aware. In certain cases, someone's behind and they're aware they're still living there, but maybe it's an inherited property. How often are you calling somebody and being, you know, sharing the news of, hey, surprise, you own this property and you didn't know it?
It's actually very common. When families will disconnect and disassociate, have family problems and disputes, things like that, that's very common. A person will pass away, a grandparent or a parent, and their kids aren't connected enough with them, or it's such a fractured family that they actually don't know mom's dead, or they don't know that their aunt died and they're the heir to a property. And we make that call a lot.
Do people think you're calling it a scam? I mean, how do you get over that initial, like, this is a Nigerian prince calling and saying, hey, you know, wire me $3,000 and I'll give you this property type of thing?
We have to get over that a lot of times. You'll hear that, people. But here's where it's different. When you've got some scammer calling, it becomes apparent. When someone in my office calls and says, look, your Auntie Jenny passed away. I'm sorry. You may or may not know that. But you know Aunt Jenny didn't have any children. And her sister, Susie, is your mom. And we realize that Susie had four kids, you and your two siblings. The reason we're calling is we think you're actually the heirs, but you might not have gotten noticed because they did citation by publication, the ad litem attorney did, in the tax lawsuit, which we're looking at. We're happy to send you a copy of that. Would you like us to send it to you, or would you like to have this conversation beforehand? When you say that, the Nigerian prince guy won't have that information about their family and about a tax record and a legal proceeding.
For sure.
So there's a little more credibility there, but I'll tell you, that still happens a lot.
Yeah.
I can imagine. I bet you it happens all the time. But you can get past it pretty quick, though.
Yeah. With early days, we had trouble getting past it sometimes. And at that time, we built a website and, you know, did those things to help prove credibility. At this point, it's the conversation now.
For sure. Absolutely. Okay, so you go through and you're looking at these two different lead sources. Is there anywhere else that you're getting a lot of your deals from?
You know, I don't usually talk about this a lot because it's complicated and I don't want to deter people. But we've got really complicated scrapers. Well, they're complicated. I'm not very technologically advanced, but they're scrapers that run reports through the docket search to find recently filed lawsuits, partition, judgments, liens, tax final sale orders that are going to be a tax foreclosure sale soon. We'll run scrapers through that, pull that data. We can aggregate that data really quickly and then filter it. We use Salesforce because it's the like best, most integrative CRM there is. And we can run programs in that that will bring us the highest probability of what we're looking for.
So you're using AI basically to go scrape.
Generally, yeah. Now, that's not something I usually talk about because this can sound like a complicated concept already, and I don't want to deter people. When you're on the ground level doing whatever real estate business you're doing and you want to look into this in an exploratory way, I say go buy a delinquent tax list, start making calls, and be prepared to fix the problems and get skilled at making low offers. That's how you get started. A couple years in, then you might want to hear the other stuff I'm talking about.
For sure. Yeah, that makes sense. So it sounds like you're teaching people how to do this stuff.
So we did. I had a guy several years ago ask me about a coaching program, and I really wasn't doing it. I agreed to do it and ran a small group of it as a pilot, and it worked really well. So we do have a component in our office now of that. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm sure our listeners would love to get some info on that. So, I mean, what does that look like? What does it look like for you? Or what kind of, you know, inlet are you taking? Because maybe you're teaching stuff that's so detail oriented. Maybe you don't want so many students, or is it kind of like you have to accept them? Or,
you know, there's so many title problems out there, especially in Texas and any other states. We will never scratch the surface. You know, there's still opportunities to do wholesale and flip deals. And the last 10 years of YouTube has been sharing the message and training people in droves. So I'm not really concerned about us hurting our own market or creating competition, especially because it's just us, a small group. But yeah, we take about 20 to 30 people a year in the coaching program. It's a 4 to 5 month program. And the first couple of months is just pure education, getting you ready, setting the stage like a professor, you know, like a college class. After that, there's a deal support and deal review when you help folks put together, after the educational part, put together their operation, pick a market, decide your marketing channels. And then during the program, the participants are out there making calls, doing the work. And then we have two Zooms a week that are a couple hours long for deal support and deal review. So as they're in the trenches, we're guiding them like a business partner, like an advisor to get deals done.
Cool. Very, very cool. And so, sounds like some of these students may or may have not had some success after taking your coaching program.
Yeah. You know, like I mentioned to you, a lot of folks, 70% of their field doesn't do well and 30% does. And I believe that's a coaching problem. They'll accept anybody who will pay. And at the end of the day, it's an open market and you can. We don't want that. We want to make sure folks are qualified enough that they're experienced in real estate, they've got access to some capital. And we've narrowed that field down. So we're the opposite. 70 to 80% of the people do extremely well during our program. And we get 20 or 30% that don't. And that's generally effort. You put in, you show up and do what we say, you're making money.
Yeah.
I've trained 20 people in my office to do it. I can train more if you pay me to come to the program.
That's fantastic.
So you mentioned your team and you've got a lot of people working on your team, a couple of attorneys, a genealogist, and some other things like that. So What is the breakdown? How many people are actually like calling on these leads that you have of trying to start the process and doing that, just getting the process started with, you know, sellers?
Of our office of 20, about 8 of them are on the phone.
Okay.
So we have a couple different business lines run by different people, but each one of those business lines will have 1 to 3 people calling the better part of the week.
Okay.
And I would call them acquisitions folks, but they're much more highly trained than just the typical like cold caller, I guess. They've been doing these deals with us for a while. They've been mentored or trained by partners or me. So they have high level conversations. Now, the interesting part is we don't use VAs because they're lower quality, but with a VA, you've got to call 100 people to have a good conversation. With us, it's about 25 to 30 to a deal.
Wow.
So it's worth us having domestic, higher paid folks running those calls, because every 25 or 30 calls, you're getting a deal done.
That's crazy. Okay.
That speaks to the low level of competition.
Yeah.
And the high need for this when you're calling the right people.
Yeah, I was about to say, that means you're calling a really, you know, target rich list if you're doing that.
That's right.
25 people or 30 people to get something working. That's crazy. So what are your business lines? Well, you said you had three of them.
So that really speaks more to ownership structure. So as I started this business, I got to the point where I was running out of time every week and I made good money, but I thought, how do I make more? So I met a couple other guys, you know, over the next few years that were bright, hardworking, had the drive. They just didn't quite have the capitalization, or they didn't have the office like I had. They didn't have the pieces, the background. So I brought them in, trained them, started a company with them and said, I own half, you own half, and you run this company. Let me help you build it and grow it, and then you can run it. So that's how those develop. So all four of those look for distressed property, but they're each owned by a different business partner.
Okay.
And they run each one slightly different.
Yeah, everybody has their own niche of what they want to do or what they're good at. And
yeah, one guy focused geographically. One guy picks all of Texas. One guy loves the lawsuit postings. One guy loves the delinquent tax. It's just personality based as to how they run each one.
For sure. And what their personality fits with the kind of people that they're talking to from whatever lead source they're getting.
Right. I've got one partner that's just him and one cold caller, you know, in the office. And they run a great business. You know, it does, I don't know, a couple million dollars in sales. So they net 700 to a million a year annually. And then on the other end of that spectrum, I got a guy that's got four people in his operation. But, I mean, they got 10 million inventory right now. Nine million.
They're going. They're moving.
Yeah, it's just a different personality, different needs.
What kind of resources are you having to have, though, to, like, work through all these issues? Like, because there's a – I feel like a lot of it is very resource or labor intensive to get this stuff going, I guess, if you're looking at it that way.
It is. A good set of attorneys is really important. We do a certain amount of research, and when we get to the point where it starts to take a whole ton of time, we use private investigators to – get us the rest of the way. We'll also do 80% of the research for genealogy work and data that we're looking for. And when we get to the point where it's going to start taking a ton of time, we'll have a genealogist, or we'll hire a third party to dig it up for us.
Okay.
So we do pay. We use the resources, but surprisingly, they're not expensive. For $200-$300, you can have a oil and gas landman firm run you an entire genealogy report or title report on a property. A couple $100. And you get a professional to do it. So they hand that back, and then we dig in.
What are they looking at when you get, like, a landman to do that? Because I've never heard of somebody using a landman company to go run a title commitment.
So what we'll have them do is, first off, there's a company called ProTitle USA. For a couple $100, they'll produce an AI-generated online title report, and they're 90% accurate. So we'll have that. It'll be delivered within a day. From there, we'll do our own amount of research, but sometimes when it gets much more complicated or very old ownership, we'll hire a landman. They'll go digging around the land records. They'll go look in the clerk records, Google, the court dockets, any place they can find all that information and start to piece together a family tree, an ownership story, and they'll deliver that back to us. The same thing they do when they're doing mineral work out there for ExxonMobil, but they'll do it for us for $300-$400.
That's cool. The things you learned.
Yeah. Early on, we had to do all of that work, and we would spend ridiculous amounts of time. But as our operation started to become more efficient, we realized, hey, we have some retained earnings. We can pay someone to save a week of our time, and we'll go work on something else. And that's how the inventory starts to build, and your pipeline grows very quickly.
Cool. So, you know, you have all these deals that are, let's say, 3 months, 4 months, 6 months, maybe even a year out. Are you using that? I mean, how are you forecasting your revenue to make sure you're able to cover all of your expenses and that sort of thing?
We don't forecast the way a lot of companies would, because there are a lot of variables in it. But for us, the financial discipline helps that matter less. So when you've got significant retained earnings and they're easy to get to, you're not investing them in long-term stuff, you've got the access to the liquidity. So making payroll is never an issue. I'll give you an example. One of the companies can dramatically vary as to how much investment capital is available. And you might have to spend $200,000-$300,000 in a week or two buying shares from people, paying delinquent taxes, paying legal bills. You know, our legal bills are $50,000 a month these days consistently. So you've got to make those commitments immediately. But in that case, I've got one account that's investment capital. The other account is overhead. And they have 6 months of overhead in that. So when they run out of the investment capital, they need to go work to clean some stuff up, get stuff to market, recover that capital. But now they're working on their 6 months of overhead. So they've got to clean all that up within 6 months. But they still have an account that covers salaries, payroll, rent to ourselves, all those things. So we do separate it out like that to be careful. They're protectionary methods, because if it's like iPhones, someone just works their sales process and gets a bunch of sales to happen because they've got the inventory built up. We have to cure the defects to get the inventory to work. So it's not so just in time as a manufacturing facility would be.
No, not at all. And there's a lot of steps that can be created along the way, like what you didn't foresee.
A lot of surprises. We might find a person who we didn't think was an owner but is, because it was a child that no one knew about, and we uncover them, and they're a minor. It could take 9 months in the court to get what do they call it? It's a guardianship of the real estate of a minor.
Yeah.
Guardianship of the estate of a minor is what it is. So you might have to go through that just to allow the signature to work. Surprises.
Yeah, those are fun.
Yeah. Under 18 years old can't legally sign Mm-mm. in Texas. I guess probably most of the states, but right. but that's what you're referring to in terms of the guardianship.
Right, so you have to go and appoint a guardian. The judge has to approve of it, and then they also want to know what it is that this person is going to do, because minors or incapacitated people or handicapped people are many times taken advantage of because they don't have the ability to make their own decisions.
For sure.
So when dad is just going to do this transaction, is dad going to pocket the money? Is dad selling it to his brother on the cheap? Judges usually will look over that.
They sign like an ad litem attorney to it usually, too, to make sure the whole thing goes the way it's supposed to.
So you've got the attorney that we hire for us. Then we will hire an attorney for them and let them manage that attorney so it can get expensive. The court will appoint an ad litem to make sure all the attorneys are okay.
Oh, wow.
So we've had cases where there are three attorneys involved. And we're paying for them all.
There's lots of lawyers.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets expensive that way.
The lawyers always win.
They do. They do.
The lawyers always win. That's crazy, man. So what are you doing in Houston? What's going on with you being here in Houston this week?
We've got an expert panel tonight in Houston. It's a free event. Got a lot of folks going to show up here. So every once in a while in a new market, we'll do some stuff like this to just build the rapport, build the equity in the market. And that's what we're doing here.
Okay. And so the goal of this is to just kind of build some goodwill in the market and have your name get out there? Or what's the hope?
Yeah, generally. We do a fair amount of business in Houston, but our network isn't huge. Just because the transactions are here, you know, we're dealing with a buyer, a seller, a title company, and maybe a surveyor and maybe an attorney. But we don't have a really big presence here. And to your comment earlier, there are a lot of operators here, and we think there's a lot of opportunity. So by us helping educate folks, by us sharing who we are and what we do here, they realize they have another option. Instead of throwing the deal away, we're here too.
For sure.
So we've assembled a group. We've got a couple spec builders. We've got an incredible broker, a couple wholesalers, and we're going to do an expert panel tonight.
Awesome. And the expert panel is going to be discussing, what do you think?
Yeah, folks submitted questions, and we went through the questions, and they were broken out per person. So we've got, for example, you got a 15-minute segment that the group of questions are asked to. Nick Perry's a wholesaler out of Austin who lives in Cancun right now.
He's got a fun life.
Yeah.
Too bad, huh?
He's got, I don't know, 7 or 8 questions that are directly tailored to him. And then the rest of us will kind of fill in behind him if we want to offer commentary on that topic. So we'll go through each of the panelists like that. It'll be moderated by Julia Wang, who's a local broker that's, you know, super well known here.
Cool. Very, very fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a good event, sounds like.
It is.
And that's going to be over at HCU?
Yeah.
Dunham Theater, yeah.
Dunham HCU. Theater. HCU. Used to be HBU.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got confused on that too because I wasn't familiar with which one was right. So I said both. That's
remarkable. They changed 2 years ago.
Yeah.
2 years ago. Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Yeah, we picked that event because you just sometimes don't know how big the turnout's gonna be. So we want to make sure there's room for everybody.
That's a big theater.
It'll seat 1,000 people, I think. At this point we've got 500 signed up somewhere around that neighborhood.
Cool.
I suspect pretty good turnout.
There's going to be a bunch of people there.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What a great way to get your name out into the community and get people going. I mean, we're coming up to the end of our show. What's a good way? Two things. What would you like to leave with our listeners as far as a thought goes to provoke maybe something for why they should be looking at the kind of business that you're doing? And then B, how can they get a hold of you if they're interested in your coaching, how they figure out that whole scenario too?
You know, me and Lucian both are easy to get a hold of. Instagram's a great channel. We do a great job of keeping up to date with our messages. So I would check there. The message I would give to people is it's not quite as complicated to do this as you think. You know, I'm talking about some of the very advanced techniques and parts of it. But in the early days, I literally knew nothing, could figure out how to make $500,000 a year net and with just a little bit of hard work and a very small amount of capital. So I encourage folks to go try to seek out those problems and just start asking the questions. How do I fix this? Who do I call to fix it? What's next? And if you try to find the answers to all those questions, you might wind up with a bunch of profit and a new business line.
Literally.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, we're super thankful for you guys coming on the show. Listeners, if you want to get a hold of these guys, it's Logan Fulmer, F-U-L-L-M-E-R, on Instagram, right?
That's
right. Same thing. And then Facebook, the same thing. Lucian, what's your handle on Instagram?
It's Lucian.Galloway, L-U-C-I-A-N, and then G-A-L-L-O-W-A-Y.
Awesome, man. Yeah. Well, yeah, I highly recommend you reach out to these guys, figure out if there's something that you can do. If you're around in the Houston area and tonight, we'd love to have you come through and go to the event tonight at HBU or HCU now.
Yeah, come see us. We love it.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else you want to close out with?
No, we appreciate you guys coming by.
Anytime.
Awesome.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, guys.